This episode is brought to you in part by the Table Podcast from the Hendricks Center at Dallas Theological Seminary. I'm Daryl Bach, one of the hosts, and I invite you to join us as we discuss issues of God and culture, which includes anything and everything. Listen on your podcast app or at dts.edu/thetable.
This episode of Quick to Listen is brought to you in part by Classic Christian Thinkers, the new book by author and theologian Kenneth Samples. It highlights the lives of some of Christianity's greatest historical figures. Get your copy today by visiting www.reasons.org/quick to listen.
Today is Wednesday, May 29th, and you're listening to Quick to Listen, where we go beyond hashtags and hot takes to discuss a major cultural event. I'm Morgan Lee, digital media producer here at Christianity Today, and I am joined by my co-host, Mark Galley.
Hello.
Hey, Mark. How's it going?
Good. It's good to actually be here. We were on our way back from Colorado, driving back. We were stuck on the side of the road because of threatened hailstones as big as a quarter or even bigger.
Oh, wow.
As well as a tornado touching down.
Wow.
So I was thinking maybe we're going to have to spend another night on the road before I get back home. But it cleared up pretty quickly and we were able to move along.
Is that like somehow safer to just be pulled over?
Well, you're pulled over under an underpass.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of us were pulled over under an underpass to the point where the road the highway itself was actually blocked by people waiting for this thing to pass.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, that's exciting. I know that there's been a lot of really just like intense Midwestern weather this week.
Yeah, exactly. So we were on the edges of it, not the center. People in the center really had some disastrous things happen.
All right. Well, welcome back. Who is our guest today?
Our guest is Kwok Wai Luen, better known as Andrew. That's how we'll be addressing him for this podcast. He's associate professor in the Department of Religion and Philosophy at Hong Kong Baptist University, where he is also associate director for the Center for Sino-Christian Studies. Welcome, Andrew.
Hello, Matt. Hello, Morgan.
And if I understand correctly, you're not in Hong Kong right now. You are in the UK.
Oh, yes. Now I have my research sabbatical as of Oxford University. Yeah.
And what are you studying this year?
Well, this year I'm studying on the social justice issue of Chinese Christianity in Republican period. That is the earlier 20th century. I am writing up a book. Yeah, that I want to finish it before the summer. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to having you on the show, and it'll become pretty apparent about why we're going to be having you on the show as I get into our summary today. So, in April, 9 Hong Kong activists were convicted for participating in the pro-democracy Occupy Central and Umbrella Movement protests. One of those was a Baptist pastor, Chu Yuanming. In the courtroom, he painted a vivid picture of the faith that had transformed his life and inspired his activism. We have no regrets. We hold no grudges, no anger, no grievances. We do not give up, he said, speaking on behalf of fellow activists striving to bring universal voting rights to Hong Kong. In the words of Jesus, happy are those who are persecuted because they do what God requires. The kingdom of heaven belongs to them. And he was quoting from Matthew 5:10 there. Christianity Today's coverage of Chu's sermon was one of our most popular news stories of the year, with many on social media praising his bravery. Chu was not the only leader known for his faith. Earlier this month, Joshua Wong, a 22-year-old Hong Kong pro-democracy activist, was returned to prison. Earlier this year, he told this to World Magazine. As Christians, we are not only responsible for preaching the gospel and then waiting to go to heaven when we die. We need to be bringing heaven down to earth. This seems like a totally idealistic dream, but if we want that dream to come true, how should we let people know that as Christians if we don't focus only on trying to increase our salaries and better our careers? We ask, how can we do more for the people around us? The Umbrella Movement and Occupy Central protests have not been welcomed by all Christians. Several years ago, Archbishop Paul Kwong at Anglican St. John's Cathedral angered many Hong Kong Christians after saying that pro-democracy activists should remain silent, as Jesus did while being crucified more than 2,000 years ago. This week on Quick to Listen, we'll explore what's at stake in the Umbrella Movement, how Christians have influenced it, but also why it's divided the church. All right. So we have lots of things to get into today. Mark, I would love to just get a gut reaction from you as we start.
My gut reaction was, well, probably since I'm not completely familiar with what's going on there, and what one of the reasons I enjoy doing this podcast is getting more familiar, but I have been familiar at a distance with many Chinese activists whose faith prods them to work for human rights. And I do know the story of some of them and the sacrifices it requires. And I have to admit, I am deeply impressed with their level of commitment. So that's my gut reaction whenever I marvel at their courage.
I am definitely really interested in this with regards to the way that it seems like it has potentially split the Hong Kong Christian community. I definitely know that it seems to echo things in our own country, especially around the civil rights era 50 years ago, about Christians who felt that in some ways there was a tension between their own faith and politically organizing in this particular way. And it seems like it's always a really controversial thing when Christians decide that their faith is the thing that leads them to the streets, while there's other Christians feel like that's really inappropriate to maybe protest the government that way. Yeah, I'm just really looking forward to our discussion about this. And Andrew, so I'm wondering if you can tell our listeners what the Umbrella Movement is exactly and what it's about.
Actually, if you know that, Umbrella Movement is not the original name that Benny Tai, Reverend Zhu, and another university professor, Dr. Chen Kimin, originally, they named the movement as Occupy Central with Love and Peace. In 2013, January, Benny Tai wrote an article in a local newspaper. Actually, the name, the title of that newspaper article is very annoying. That's called the Mass Destructive Weapon for Democratic Movement. But because the central government promised Hong Kong people we will have a universal vote right after 1997 for our chief executive. But finally, you found that after nearly 20 years, that kind of election cannot be realized. So Benny Tai in 2013, he wrote that article, and he just at that time, he conceived that if the central government refused to give a meaningful universal voting rights to Hong Kong people, then he suggests that Hong Kong people should have a kind of civil disobedience movement to give pressure to Hong Kong government and central government to grant us the universal voting right. So this is the very beginning of the so-called Umbrella Movement. Actually, it was called Occupy Central with Love and Peace. And because of this newspaper title, a mass destructive weapon, okay, so this title has ignited a lot of division among different social groups. So it just like a fire. Then a lot of people discuss whether it is good, okay, to use a kind of destructive weapon, okay, to realize democracy in Hong Kong. You find that actually because many Hong Kong people, they want to have democracy for a very, very long time. Since 1980s, Hong Kong people start to ask for direct election, okay, both legislation and also for the executive head. We want to have that kind of democracy, but
so even when the British were in charge of Hong Kong, the Hong Kong people were not allowed to vote. Is that correct?
We have the first indirect election for the legislature in 1984, and then we have the first direct election in 1991. So it is very late, and the British document that released recently, one of the factors that we cannot have direct election in 1988, because the communist government, the Chinese government, want to stop that direct election by that time and give a diplomatic pressure to British government. So that stopped the direct election proposal in 1980s. Yeah.
And since then, basically after Hong Kong moved from being under British control to Chinese control, as you mentioned, they have not been able to secure voting rights, which has then led people to protest the government.
But just before the handover, that is the first direct election is in 1991. So this is the first direct election in Hong Kong. So very short time. But in 1980s, British government, they already want to have some kind of so-called localization process. So in Hong Kong, we have some basic self-governing councils, okay? For example, district boards or the urban council. By that time, that is the local governing bodies, okay? British government, they start direct election in 1980s. So this is the starting point that you can say that the Hong Kong people have democracy in legislature or the local governments. Yeah.
And in what year would you say that the Occupy Central movements started?
Benny Tai started his propaganda in 2013. But actually, the movement break out in 2014, September 28th. And in between, you will find that actually Christian groups are highly involved in that movement. Yeah, because just after January 2013, the first article, Benny Tai, came out. And then he wrote another article in Christian newspaper in February, and to call for Christians to support his civil disobedience project. And then in March 2013, Reverend Zhu, Dr. Chen, and Benny Tai, they have a kind of a manifesto on Occupy Central Movement. And that manifesto was issued and announced and has a press conference in a church. So you can see that Christians are highly involved in that movement.
So you have these Christians who are involved all the way back in 2013 and 2014. What can you tell us about this guy who we mentioned, Joshua Wong?
He is a bright young man. You can say that a second generation of a Christian family. He became a social leader in 2012. There was a campaign called the Anti-National Education Campaign because in 2012, Hong Kong government, they proposed to have a kind of curriculum to have the so-called the national education. But the students found that national education quite brainwashing, and in not a kind of civic education, but rather than a kind of brainwashing education. So Joshua Wong, by that time, they were secondary school students. They have other secondary school students form a group called Scholarism. That is a group that called Scholarism, and then they initiate a campaign against the government. And then in September 2012, university students and secondary school students, they sit in before the government headquarters. And I think by that time, around 30,000 people sit in there and cause a lot of pressure to the government. And then at last, the government just canceled the whole proposal about the national education. So this is what happened. Yeah.
So he originally, you said, was protesting this idea that the government might be trying to use propaganda on them. And then I'm assuming he moved from that political campaign to become more political and to participate in Occupy Central as well.
Yes, yes, indeed. Yeah, because after that campaign, he become one of very famous young social activists. Yeah, by that time.
How was he regarded by his local churches then? Was he regarded as a radical, or is he a hero, or what?
As far as I know, his own congregation church, at least, they give him spiritual support and still embrace him as a good member and brother in Christ. So I think his own church actually support him quite well, as far as I know. His congregations and his pastor, as I know, they offer him spiritual care and spiritual support. So they do not very stand out for political actions, but at least they consider him as a very good brother and embrace him. Yeah, but for other Christians in other congregations, you will find that the opinions are quite towards Wong and other social activists, Christian social activists.
You were saying that other Christians don't necessarily support what's happening. What are the main arguments that they're saying against the Christians who are supporting the movements?
As you and Mark had talked about Bishop Paul Kong, actually, this is one of the very typical arguments about why they go against the Occupy movement. The first is that they think democracy is not a necessary good. Okay, democracy cannot solve all the problems. So don't go for civil disobedience movement just for democracy. And they think that this is not something violating human rights or not a very oppressive regime, there's no case for a kind of civil disobedience. They think civil disobedience should be done unless you face some kind of segregation or some kind of racial discrimination. That's what they think. And they think democracy and voting rights cannot use civil disobedience to solve the things. And then the second thing is that they think Occupy Central is not civil disobedience. They think Occupy Central is a kind of occupying movement. So they are intentionally violating the law. And that law is not directly related to what you want to object, to achieve, And so that they think actually there's no case intentionally to violate a rightful law is not a Christian practice. And so this is the second argument. And the third argument is that some Christians think, oh, China is on the road of become better and better. And why you use such a kind of oppositional and violent movement to against the government, and this is very unwise to do the things. So this is the third argument. For those Christians opposed the Occupy Central movement, they actually I would describe them, they are living in a quite alternative reality with those in the social participation.
What do you mean by that alternative reality?
They think, okay, Hong Kong is quite good. Hong Kong is prosperous. Hong Kong is stable. Hong Kong, compared with maybe other Asian regions, is safe and quote-unquote just. And so that from this perception of reality, they think that this is no case for civil disobedience.
Okay. So you're not saying that's a false reality. That's just what they experience and how they react to it.
Well, I think for them, this is not a false reality, but maybe this is the reality that they can enjoy and they are living in. So it is somehow a partial true reality, okay?
Uh-huh.
Not totally true, yeah, but yeah, somehow they are in that reality. Or you can say that this is quite unfortunately that why we are in a so deep division in Hong Kong churches, yeah.
Okay.
Because some people, they are well off, they enjoy much privilege, but other maybe thing, they have problems, yeah.
Yeah, so in other words, it may be true for the people who are not protesting. All of this may be true for them, but it may not be true for the entire country.
Indeed, indeed.
All right, so you have this split, and I'm just curious right now, Andrew, how severe has the Occupy Central movement caused the church? How much division is there today?
I think now in the church in Hong Kong, we're still talking about two very important issues. The first issue is the division still there. And then now somehow politics become a kind of taboo in ordinary church life, unless your church is quite active already in social movement. Then maybe everyone maybe just shut up and do not talk about politics. And this is what ordinary church life happened. But on the other hand, you will find that Christians are very, very active. Those Christians want to support the social movement. They are very active outside the church. And then you will find that for the young generation, because they are very disappointed with the church leadership, they are conservative politically, they left the church. So in Hong Kong recently, a big topic is about the young generation left church. I think this is a big problem that we face, yeah.
So there's this sense that because the older generation didn't support some of these protests, or fewer older Christians supported the protests, overall, some of the young people who did support the protests don't even want to be in the church anymore.
Indeed. Yeah, they left.
I read this article to do some more research about this topic. It interviewed some of the parents of the protesters, and one of them was Joshua Wong's parents. He basically said that it had been really confusing and hard for the parents to see their son in this position. I'm just curious if that is your experience at all, where within Christian families, there's also been division over this as well.
I think there's division. Joshua Wong's father is quite exceptional, yeah, because his father is very active, an active conservative evangelical. And before all this democratic movement, his father is active in some kind of pro-family movement. He is very engaged to the movement against LGBT in Hong Kong. And so then you will find that his father already is some kind of social activist. And so why that Josh Wong's father is very supportive to Joshua, and somehow I think that political activism also influenced Joshua. But for some family parents, actually, as I have told you, I'm a theology member of Christian and Missionary Alliance Union Hong Kong. During the Umbrella Movement or Occupy Movement period, parents expressed their worries about their children. They worry their children being arrested by the police and or being beaten by police. And then our denomination organized some kind of dialogue between different parties, between parents and the students, and even we invite some retired police officers and to engage with the students and to have dialogue. And so you see that ordinary Christian families, their parents are very worried about their children by that time.
This episode is brought to you by the Truce Podcast. I'm sure you've been there. You're at an event, a dinner, a small group, and someone says something like,
"If you're a Christian, you have to vote Republican."
Huh. That raises an interesting question. How did evangelicals like me get to the place where we just assumed we'd all vote one way? This season on the Truce Podcast, we're diving deep into the complexity of the 1970s and 80s to understand how evangelicals tied themselves to the Republican Party. It's a story that involves murder, corruption, redemption, and our need to be heard. I'll be talking with celebrated historians like Rick Perlstein, Pulitzer Prize winners Francis Fitzgerald and Jesse Eisinger, and some of the best guests I've ever had. Truce is the show that uses journalistic tools to look inside the Christian church. We press pause on the culture wars in order to explore how we got here and how we can do better. Subscribe to Truce anywhere you get podcasts or listen at trucepodcast.com.
So how do they relate? How do the people who are involved, the Christians who are involved in the Occupy movement, how do they understand the relationship of their faith to their politics? And let me just take a step back. Obviously, they see that their Christian faith demands that they work for human rights and for democracy. Yet there are other parts of the world, not too far from Hong Kong, where there are Christians who are committed, who think that communism and Christianity can coexist. And then there's, of course, Latin American theologians who think Marxism and Christianity can coexist, that Christianity almost demands a type of Marxist approach to life. So how do they relate their faith to their particular political passions?
Your question is very good. Actually, before the Occupy movement, even the Occupy movement, Benny Tai and Reverend Ju, they do not attempt to overthrow the Communist China. Actually, they just ask for the Communist China to fulfill their promise for the universal vote rights for Hong Kong people. So for Christians in Hong Kong, when they join in the civil disobedience movement, I think they have a kind of a heart to want to see justice, okay? Or they want to do something good for their later generation, rather than they want to overthrow the communist government. So I think we are quite different from liberation theology, thinking that whether communism or Christianity can be coexist, or whether we should join in communism to support a kind of liberation, okay, in Hong Kong. I don't think we have that kind of theological perspective. Rather, you will find that, for example, Benny Tai and Reverend Ju, they all come from so-called evangelical denominations. So I think for they are quite easy basis. They will think that, okay, they just want to support democracy and to support good, and this is the Christian duty to do good. And the Bible told us that if the authority has do something bad, Christians should bold enough to say no to the government. I think that's all. And then you found that that even from Benny Tai's exposition, you will find that he does not have a kind of liberation theology to think about whether Christianity can join in communism or go against communism.
Okay. So the issue is justice and not the form of government as such.
No, not the form of government. Just about democracy, and they want the government keep promise that they have given to the people. Yeah. So this is. But after the Umbrella Movement, you will find that the political situation gone worse and worse, and so that for Christians now, we are deeply to want to find out our spiritual resources for what Hong Kong Christians should look for in the near future. Yeah.
Wow. So it sounds like you're saying that the protests were not successful then.
I think that's just beginning. Yeah. The protest is not successful. Yeah. We cannot achieve what we want, that is the universal voting right. But you found that during the movement, a lot of people in Hong Kong, we call that being weakened. They weakened from, even Christians, they weakened, for example, some very well-off Christians, professional Christians, they realize actually our society is not so good. We have a lot of problems and social issues that we need to address. The government policy that we also need to look for. So I think the Occupy movement or Umbrella movement is just the starting point of the Hong Kong democratic endeavor. Yeah.
So in other words, you're saying that basically they may not have been successful in changing the government's mind, but they were helpful in helping Christians maybe challenge themselves and see what they overlooked. And I guess that leads me to my next question, which is, would you say that the majority of Christians in Hong Kong are going to be wealthy?
Well, I think when compared with average Hong Kong people, from our statistic, you will find that because in the past, Christian churches, they run a lot of good schools. And so that a lot of Christians in Hong Kong, they became Christian because they are in Christian schools. And they are trained by Christian school and go to universities and become professionals. And so that you will find that actually Hong Kong Christians are middle upper class.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them are quite well off professionals in the society. And actually when you to look at the government, that is very interesting. Even the government now, a lot of officials, they are Christians or Catholics. And so it explains how Christians occupy the social positions in Hong Kong.
Mark was asking you a little bit earlier about some of the influence that Christians on the mainland may have had on Hong Kong Christians. And I'm curious if you could tell us about the relationship between Hong Kong Christians and mainland Christians and the extent to which, you know, maybe Hong Kong Christians go over to the mainland to help disciple or train them or vice versa.
Many of Hong Kong people, they were refugees from the mainland. So you'll find that mainland Hong Christians and Hong Kong Christians, actually, we have a very strong relationship. Both historical or even current interaction and relationship. In the past, maybe, for example, in 1990s, Hong Kong Christians, they offer a lot of help to the mainland Christians in terms of resources, in terms of training, or even in terms of money support. They offer a lot of support. But indeed, now mainland churches, in terms of population, Christian population, they are much bigger than Hong Kong churches. So we found that, the roles are somehow from the past. We are helper, and mainland churches are being helped, but now I think somehow we are co-workers or partners. Hong Kong churches still have some kind of advantage in terms of freedom of information, freedom of speech, and freedom of movement. And so that we still has role to offer training or to offer some the latest information about the world Christianity. But in terms of resources, I don't think now the mainland, they need Hong Kong help much, because they're quite well off indeed,
Wow, interesting. Even in the midst of the more recent crackdowns on the church in China?
In recent crackdown, you will see that Hong Kong become a platform for information. You will find that a lot of campaign to ask for the world awareness of this kind of Christian persecution, initially they start from Hong Kong. You can see that, for example, the signature campaign petition also initiated by Hong Kong Christians. So I think you can see Hong Kong Christians are very concerned about our mainland brothers and sisters. So whenever they have some problems and we offer prayers, we offer voice, okay, and we try to gather support to support them. But yeah, in terms of resources, I'm still quite think that mainland churches, they are rising, Hong Kong churches is just keep steady in terms of resources, yeah.
In terms of the divisions in the that they're experiencing in Hong Kong, I'm wondering if anyone's taking what I'd call a big picture view. It has struck me that as I've looked at protest movements in the past, whether they're Christian or not, it does seem to me that there are some, this is related to some of the arguments of the Christians who are against the protests. It has struck me that as I've read history of social change in various places, that actually it isn't usually an either or world. That is to say, there are some people on the front lines protesting, while there are some people in the government actually not protesting, but actually trying to make changes within the system, and they're everybody in between. But in order for something to change, you need Christians doing all three things. But when you're in the middle of that tension and argument, it feels like an either or. If you're not for the protesters, you're not really a good Christian, or if you are a protester, you're not, et cetera, et cetera. Is anyone seeing it from that perspective in Hong Kong at this time?
I can say that, yeah, nobody could voice out that, when you within the government, then you can initiate some kind of changes. Because we know that Hong Kong government, somehow they are also being controlled by the central government. I don't think that now we have some church leaders come out to say publicly, okay, we need to have different kind of people, or you may imagine we have some kind of undercover within the government to initiate the movement. No church leaders say that. Actually, yeah, because when you read the central government's papers, they work with Christianity as a kind of a tools of the so-called the peaceful revolution for them. So I think that's quite difficult, yeah, for whether we can have church leaders to come out to say, oh, we can have different people and then we can do different roles. Yeah.
Right. Well, they obviously, if you're working within an unjust structure to work for change, you can't very well say it out loud that you're doing it.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So actually, we are just a kind of a small part of the bigger PRC politics. Yeah. So that is quite sad for Hong Kong churches, I think. Yeah. Now. Yeah.
I'm wondering if there are any other names of Christian leaders in this movement that you think we should know or our listeners should know.
Reverend Yu Tin Yao, okay, he is the chairman, because he stepped down and retired now. He was the chairman of a Methodist church in Hong Kong. And I think he is one of the very senior clergymen in Hong Kong churches that he openly stepped out and to support the Occupy movement. Even, for example, during the Occupy movement, he opens the church to let the campaigner to come to the church, take waters, or to use washroom, or to take a rest, or to have some silence moment. So he is very generous to those campaigners by that time. And so I think Reverend Yu is one of the very important leaders that the outside world should know. But you found that actually, besides particular leaders, a lot of young pastors in Hong Kong, they form groups and to become a kind of so-called the post-umbrella groups, and to support and to continue the spirit of the campaign. Yeah, so I think this group you can take notice of. Yeah.
How would you challenge listeners of this podcast to pray for the Hong Kong church?
I would like to ask for Christians in the world to pray for Hong Kong, for heart, especially for Hong Kong church and Christians, for heart of love and peace. Because I think in the division, we have a lot of hatred and anger in ourselves. So please pray for us for a heart of love and peace. Also, pray for us a heart of spiritual discernment and justice. As I have told you, some people, we are living in alternative reality, okay? We need much spiritual discernment to find out the truth and the falsehood, and fight for the justice for the people. I ask for to pray for our hearts with patience and service. Just as Mark told, maybe some now we cannot be successful just to use social activism. But I think service Christian generosity and kindness can show how we can achieve justice and equal society or a equality society in Hong Kong through our Christian witness in our life. So please pray for us for these areas.
It's very helpful. Thank you. It's very specific.
That's my pressure.
Yes, I think that's what Mark is usually preaching all the time, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think what's being experienced in Hong Kong is every social justice movement is tempted toward hate and anger because the injustice is so infuriating.
Indeed.
Yeah, but for Christians, that's not going to work. We've got to move beyond the hate and the anger, and still seek justice without giving up. Sure.
But it's difficult. It's difficult.
Oh my gosh, it's really hard when you're in the middle of it. When you're in the middle of the battle. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, because every day when you read the newspaper, read the news on the internet, on the TV, you find so many disgusting things and irritating things happen around you.
And Mark is all about Christian unity, even in the midst of this stuff.
I should read Mark's work.
Yes, you should. Well, thank you so much, Andrew, for chiming in and educating us about this. I want to remind everyone that if they have feedback, they can leave it for us on Twitter. We're at CT Podcast. They can also send us an email. We're at podcast@christianitytoday.com. And as everyone, I believe, knows, this podcast is made possible by people who support our ministry. And Mark had a chance to go along with a couple other staff members down to the Lilly Endowment in Indiana last week, Indianapolis, I believe. And what kind of stuff did you guys do there? And also, what is the Lilly Endowment, I guess?
The Lilly Endowment, they give away lots of money and one of their areas that they give money to is to churches. They mostly, in their history, have given it to mainline and liberal churches, but in the last few years, they've decided that evangelical organizations are worthy of some of their funds. So they've given funds to National Association of Evangelicals and to Christianity Today. So they gave us a fair amount of money to help us with our infrastructure so that we could evolve and be competitive in the world of journalism. And then they invite all these grantees to a conference to talk and share and see if there's any synergy going on between groups that they can work together on. So that was what that conference was about. So we mixed it up with people of all sorts of political, theological views. From my perspective, some more disconcerting than others. But we had just good meetings for 2 days. And probably the most important thing for me is I got to spend 3.5 hours in the car with our new president, going down there and just getting to know him better.
Mark, when you spend time with Christians of all different backgrounds, it's a great time to put your editorials into practice.
Then. Exactly. We did have one interesting small group in which I did get to practice what I preach because the nature of the conversation was
intense.
Intense, exactly. And we left talking to each other and smiling anyway. So that was good.
That is good. All right. So if people want to give to Christianity Today, to our ministry, they can do that by going to morect.com/podcasts. That is morect.com/podcasts. Now is the time of the show that we call Precious Moments, and it gives everyone a chance to share something in the past week that was a highlight. Mark, you can go.
Well, I just I gave a hint that I was away for the weekend and was able to, of the many things I did that weekend, I got to spend 2 days fishing with my son, happens to be my oldest child, in 11 Mile Canyon in Colorado. And we got to see, you know, various and sundry wildlife up there, osprey, a fox, deer, but of course, trout as well.
That's cool. You saw a fox, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where was the fox?
He was just on the side of the road at one point, yeah. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, just to spend time with my son, and in God's, it's a beautiful canyon with these huge granite boulders, beautiful river, beautiful fish. It makes you really appreciate the beauty of creation and the God who created it.
We actually have a piece on our website right now. It's a science piece about find if animals can appreciate beauty too. And it's the conclusion is yes, and kind of what that means.
Okay.
I'm just noting that since you were talking about creation being beautiful right now. If people want to find you outside of this, where should they go?
I publish something called the Galley Report, which you can subscribe to. It's a weekly report in which I link to articles and comment on them. You can subscribe to it by going to christianitytoday.com/thegalleyreport. And I'd encourage you to give it a shot.
Mark spells his name G-A-L-L-I.
Correct.
In case you're wondering. All right, Andrew, what brought you joy in the past week?
I have a happy heart. Yeah, because if you read the news from Hong Kong, now we have a very big controversial about the so-called extradition bill. Yeah, that's to send back the suspect, okay, the criminal suspect, especially to the mainland China. Then so a lot of Hong Kong people, they worry about that. That when that bill has passed, the political rights will be deprived in Hong Kong. And so I found that, a lot of my fellow Christians in Hong Kong, though I am in Oxford now, sunny day, beautiful scene, but my heart is very, very heavy, And a lot of fellow Christians, that they initiate a lot of the signature sign-up petition to ask for the government to retract the bill. But seems that because the central government officials, they stand out to say that that bill should be passed for justice, okay? They think this is for justice, So that bill should be passed. And I think a new storm of political division and struggle will begin soon in my home city. So my heart is very heavy.
It's at times like these when you just also feel really far away from everybody too.
So that's I want to be with them, and though the WhatsApp, Facebook can connect you with them, you want to show support, and you want to have some kind of concrete to be with them.
So is there any place that people can find you outside of this podcast online?
You can visit my website at my university. That is Hong Kong Baptist University. You just type Hong Kong Baptist University and type Kwok Wai Luen, and then you can find me, and can connect me with my email. My email is wlkwok@hkbu.edu.hk. I'm happy that you would like to contact with me and to discuss about Hong Kong situation or Chinese church situation.
All right. Well, my precious moment will either make Mark feel really dated or culturally relevant, one of them. So I decided over the weekend that I was going to try to see if I wanted to get into a band called BTS. Mark, have you heard of them at all? Have you heard of them at all, Andrew? The K-pop band?
No. I want to learn.
Okay.
You can send me.
So I've been thinking about getting into K-pop for I don't know, the past couple months. And I listened to it on and off. But BTS, for people who do not know, is definitely a global phenomenon of a K-pop band. They were actually just here in Chicago 2 weeks ago. I was out of town that weekend, but the tickets sold out in like 2 hours afterwards. And they performed two nights at our largest stadium. You do know them.
Fantastic. Yeah, 2 hours sold out all the tickets. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think all like the... Anyway, it was pretty expensive to go to the show. But I really like things that people get excited about, and it's fun to be excited with them as well. So I was listening to their album all weekend, and I was also trying to read some articles. Their fan base is actually called an ARMY, which I think, or the ARMY, I guess, which I think is kind of funny.
This is the boy band from South Korea?
You know it. Yeah.
Well, Wikipedia knows it, and I just looked it up.
All right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think I'm going to be that obsessed of a fan the more I get into it, but it is fun to know what is like making other people happy and excited. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. I'm also going to the Ariana Grande concert next week, which is also exciting because I am definitely a fan of hers. So
you're into music right now.
Yes, definitely.
All right.
All right, people can find me on Twitter at MEPAYNL. That is it for us this week. Thank you everyone for listening to another episode of Quick to Listen. This podcast is produced by myself and Cray Allred. The music is by Sweeps. You can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. You can also find the podcast on Stitcher, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, wherever you want to get it. We are there. We will see you all next week.